But I think the funniest, but maybe the most really like genuine, really just feel good kind of interaction was I met this this couple at a store here in LA, and I was just literally just standing there looking at the selection. The guy walked in with his girlfriend, wife, whoever she was, and he was like, "Oh my God, you're the guy." And I was like, "Hey, what's going on, man?" And he's like, "The reason I'm at this store is because of you. All of my collection I'd found because of you, all of these things." I was like, "That's so awesome. What are you here to get?" We had a whole conversation. I think I recommended like a bottle of Cascalín Tejona Blanco or something for him to get. And he was like, "Oh my God, this is amazing. Thank you so much." He buys the bottle. He walks out. Him and his girlfriend leave. Like 5 minutes later, I'm still standing there. I'm talking to the owner. He walks back in with a pen and he goes, "Can you sign my bottle?"
You just heard Rob Gerard, who in November-ish of 2020 decided just, "Hey, let's take some pictures of my growing tequila collection. Let's put it on Instagram." And then he added some TikTok videos, and then he blew up. He is the Tequila Collective and has nearly 1 million combined followers. He still does a little work here and there in the real estate biz, but nowadays being a spirit guide is his job, with tours, private tastings, collaboration with brands, liquor stores, sponsorships, merch, and a lot more. How did he do it? And why did he do it? And how has his life changed since he started the Tequila Collective? We'll find out on this episode of The Spirit Guides, the show about the entrepreneurial journeys of the world's top booze influencers. I'm your host, Tequila J. Bear. Fans of this show are known as The Sippers, and all the sippers know that every show can be found at thespiritguides.info, and the videos are always at thespiritguides.video. The show is brought to you by Love Scotch, the premier online shop for scotches, bourbons, tequila, and a lot more. They got an extensive collection curated from around the globe. They bring you the finest distilleries to your front door. So whether you're a seasoned enthusiast like Rob or just starting your journey into the world of spirits, Love Scotch has something for everybody. And check this out. Shipping is always $19.95, regardless of the number of bottles that you procure, except for Hawaii and Alaska and overseas, of course. But sippers, visit lovescotch.com. That is lovescotch.com. And now, here's the spirit guide, Rob Gerard. Rob, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
I am fired up to talk to you because your journey has been exceptional. Like, it's, you are everywhere all the time. Tell us a little bit, if you would, just kind of how this started, your history and your passion for tequila, because obviously you collected tequila before you made content about it. So what was the ignition switch for you?
Yeah, I mean, how much time do you have? you know, the short version is I started drinking tequila in 2015 when my friend Roberto, after work, was tired of drinking beer. Like most 20-something-year-old white men, that's what I was drinking. It was a lot of beer, and I just couldn't stomach it anymore, literally. And Roberto said, you know, if you're going to hang with a Mexican, you got to drink some tequila. So that's when the journey started. Fast forward a few years of just, you know, buying bottles here and there, drinking it at different bars and restaurants, not really knowing much, but just being interested. I found myself really wanting to learn more. And then COVID hit about a year after that desire to learn more. And I just found myself at a lot of liquor stores because nothing else was open. There was nothing else to do. And with all these bottles I was starting to accrue, I felt like, okay, I need to keep some kind of logbook or journal or record. And I'm not one to really journal, but I figured with social media, I could take photos of every bottle as I go through them, review them. And since, you know, we were all locked away in quarantine, maybe find a little bit of a community through social media. And with the encouragement of my wife, that's kind of how the Tequila Collective was born. I remember, I think it was November 9th, to be exact. We were literally just sitting in bed. My wife was reading and I was just playing on my phone. And I said, I'm going to create an account. And I wanted to just be about tequila. I don't want it to be about me. I just wanted to be about tequila and my bottles. What should I call it? And we just started rattling off different names. The Tequila Collective stuck. And it's just been a wild ride since.
A wild ride indeed. How has your journey evolved since you first started? I mean, obviously, you just sort of, let's take pictures of bottles, and now you're running a whole multifaceted tequila education empire. So when you think back, like, how were there certain thresholds or pivots where you said, okay, now this is a thing?
Well, this was never the intention. I never once thought that I would be considered an influencer.
That seems to be a pattern on this show. Accidental success seems to be the through line through these episodes.
It really is. Like, I never once had the intention of being an influencer, of having a voice that would be broadcasted out to, at this point, literally millions of people. I never, you know, on November 9th of 2020, creating this account in bed, I literally said to my wife, Tay, you know, wouldn't it be really cool if I just got one free bottle? That was the goal. Like, maybe a brand will notice me and I'll get one free bottle. But aside from that, I had no expectation of what this would become. I had no vision for what it would become. And I've really had to learn along the way. And I've, you know, being in real estate, it's somewhat entrepreneurial. You know, running your own little realtor desk essentially is its own little business, although you work under, you know, a broker and things like that. So I had a little bit of an entrepreneurial spirit, but this has taken it to a whole new level. But it was never the goal. The goal was always to just enjoy tequila, learn about tequila, meet other like-minded tequila people, drinkers, whatever you want to call us, and just enjoy it and learn. You know, that was the thing. I really wanted to learn. I found that I was struggling to find information that I thought was valuable. And I figured, if I'm struggling, there's got to be other people who are struggling. So I'm learning along the way. Why not share it? Through sharing, maybe I'll learn things and people will correct me. People will learn things they didn't know. I'll learn things I didn't know, and we'll go this road together. But yeah, it's just, it's become something that I never imagined.
Over time, how did you decide, or how did it work out, to do less of your sort of regular real estate job and more of being a spirit guide as a job? Was it just sort of over time was a natural evolution, or did you have sort of a point where, like, all right, I'm just going to purposefully do less in the conventional occupation and try and really monetize this tequila project?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a very natural process. You know, as a realtor, you know, it's not a conventional 9-to-5. I didn't have to be in an office at a desk. You know, I could really work whatever hours I wanted to, and I still do. You know, people say to me all the time, you know, what's it like to not have a real job? And I'm like, well, I haven't really had a real job for a long time now. But I mean, I was literally on the phone 2 days ago at like 10 o'clock at night with a client, you know, who he's, you know, we sold his property and we're looking for a new property. And we're, you know, I'm actively doing that, not as frequently anymore, but it was very much just this started to take more and more time away from the real estate gig, and I wasn't upset about it. But I never said to myself, like, wow, you're really, you know, investing all of this time. You should put that on the back burner. It just kind of naturally developed that way.
Yeah, you didn't have time to put it on the front burner. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
One of the questions that I always ask people on this show, and depends on kind of how old they are, whether it makes a lot of sense or not, but what do you tell your parents that you do now?
You know, I think I don't really know what I tell them.
Exactly.
You know, my dad doesn't have any form of social media. Like, it's amazing that my dad knows how to use his iPhone. So I don't think my dad has ever seen a video unless my mom has shown him like some of my content. As far as my dad knows, he thinks I'm just some famous person in the tequila world. And I have to remind him, like, I'm not famous and, you know, it's not about me. But, I think my dad knows me as an influencer, which that's fine. And my mom, who has actually traveled to Mexico with me and seen me at different events and things like that, I think she has a better understanding that I'm basically, I call it a content creator. You know, that's what I am. I create content, whether it's in a digital space or, you know, in-person events or whatever else it might be, I tell them, you know, I tell my mom I'm a content creator. I think that's the best way to put it. But I'm still struggling. Like people tell me all the time, they're like, what are you? And I'm like, you know, the other day I met a gentleman who was probably in his 70s. He was like, what do you do for a living? And I was like, oh, I'm in advertising.
When you started to make this more of a business, right, and revenue opportunities started to come your way, either from brands or private tastings or tours, et cetera, how did that change your thinking about content creation, either kind of what you talk about or how often you publish? Like, what was the calculus there?
You know, that's such a good question, because let me back up. And you know this firsthand, Jay, like we are doing things that the average person has no, like this is a business that nobody else does, you know, like this is something that most people, whether they've been in business for 5 years or 50 years, you don't really have experience doing certain things like this social media content creation. So for me, everything has been a learning curve, and I've had to set, you know, strict rules for myself and things like that. But when it came to like developing this business, I made mistakes in the beginning. And I think the thing to remember was that I was really in the beginning learning so much, and I didn't understand exactly what the role that I had was. Like, I knew that I had a big following, but I don't think people, I certainly didn't understand, but I don't think brands knew how to interact with me either. They didn't understand what I was doing and how it would benefit them or how there was value for it. But I think over time, I've really come to learn that what we're providing is access and education to a lot of different viewers, audience members, whatever you want to call them. And the business side of it has developed from, you know, you're just paying me for my views essentially, to you're paying for a lot of information that I can provide you, a lot of data I can provide you, along with getting you the attention that you need for your brand. I don't know if this is answering your question or not, but it's been very tricky, and I have made mistakes. And I think the thing that people don't realize is, because this was never intended to be a business, for me, it's never been about the money. Like, the money is nice, it's, you know, but there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes. There's a lot of things that I have to pay attention to that I don't think people realize that, you know, us content creators pay attention to. But for me, it was always about learning and being true to my morals, my integrity, because at the end of the day, this could all go away. And I just want to know that I've worked with brands that I believe in, that I think are making a good product.
Obviously, it does take a ton of time, especially given the content schedule that you're keeping to, and really that most spirit guides have to keep to keep the algorithms happy and the audience satiated. What's been the impact of that and sort of becoming a spirit guide on your personal life and relationships? Like, what does Tay think about it, and your friends? I mean, it's a big time commitment.
Yeah, I don't think people realize the amount of time, the time spent. You know, I'm not kidding when I say, like, I live and breathe tequila, to the point where my wife, even, you know, more so recently, has said to me, like, we need to talk about things other than tequila. And it's hard, because on one hand, it is a business, you know, it is something that pays the bills, but I love it. Like, I absolutely love tequila. I love everything about the spirit itself, the liquid, all the way down to why the brand decided to use a synthetic cork compared to a natural cork. I think about all of these weird things. I talk to different brand owners, different brand reps, different, you know, just all kinds of people throughout the industry. I love tequila, and even broader, like, I love distillation. I was telling you before we started the show, I was learning about rum earlier today. Like, I just think distillation is super cool. And it's hard, because in a way it's become my entire personality, which in some capacities is fun. It's cool. It's fun to be known as the tequila guy. It's fun to be able to share different experiences and educate people about something that I care so deeply about and love talking about. But it's a double-edged sword. You know, at some point people go, dude, I don't need to hear about, you know, how the Tohono at Cascaween is different than the Tohono at El Tesoro. Like, I don't care.
I've got some friends who are doctors or surgeons, and I think they sometimes suffer from the same affliction, right? Which is they're so wrapped up in that profession, and thankfully so, because there's a lot of details associated with being in medicine that they look at everything through that prism, and you're sort of out hanging out, and everything becomes some kind of riff on medicine. You're like, okay, I have other interests, so I can absolutely see how that can happen. It can be consuming, but that's why you started to do it to begin with, right? Because if you didn't love that, you wouldn't spend this kind of time, even if you had the money.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, people, you know, I've had people come at me in the comment sections of different posts saying, oh, you're just getting sponsored to say this. You don't believe this. And the reality is most of the content that I produce is not sponsored. I'm not being paid to say the things that I say. It's because I genuinely care about the product and I think people should drink it. But I don't think people realize that regardless of whether you knew who I was or I had millions of followers or zero followers, if there was good tequila to be enjoyed, I enjoy making content. I enjoy making videos and I enjoy drinking tequila. It's a combination of luck, hard work, and dedication, I think. And that's really the secret. You know, the secret, I think, I've had many people now ask me, how do you become an influencer? How do you become someone who has this big following? And I usually respond and say, you have to be posting every single day. You have to be making new content all the time, because that's the only thing that will get you, you know, noticed out in the social media landscape. And you can't consistently or regularly make content if you don't care about what you're talking about.
One of the things that's always fascinating is you think you know what's going to work, and then you are surprised by our actual overlords, the algorithms. So tell me about a piece of content that you thought was maybe just okay, and it did really, really well.
Oh God, it's so true. I mean, there have been many times where, you know, I feel like the videos that always perform moderately well to well are the shopping videos. But I think one of the videos that...
And by that, just for the audience, that means when you're in a store and, correct, and you're like, this is what I would get in this store, etc.
Yeah. And I think the first time I did one in Costco, because Costco here in California, they can sell liquor. I know it's not the same at Costco all over the country or the world, but here in California... Costco's can sell hard alcohol. So I think this is the first time I ever posted a Costco video, went in there, just thought it would do okay. You know, like I would be providing some information and hopefully steering people away from, you know, the brands that have additives in them. And I think that video did like 900,000 views. And I was just like shocked, because I think I had done a couple shopping videos up until that point, but it was never anything that substantial in terms of viewership. But it was just, you know, I wasn't in the video. I was just showing different product, you know, on their, on the shelves in Costco. And I think the unfortunate part about social media is that sometimes the negativity is what takes hold. And I've been trying to rein that back in. You know, early on, I had no problem talking shit about, you know, some of the big brands that use additives and they're just mass produced, mass market, not, you know, not made in any type of quality, but just quantity. And lately I've been trying to rein that in and more so use it as a tool to educate people and say like, look, I know you might enjoy this and that's fine. You know, drink what you like. It's your money. Spend it how you want. But there are people who want something that doesn't use additives, that's made better, that's owned, you know, by a Mexican family, or, you know, just owned by not a major conglomerate in general. And here are some options. And I've had actual comments saying like, thank you for this approach. It's so refreshing to not hear these brands talked poorly about, but just give alternatives. So that's the thing I've been trying to focus on a little bit more, but it's wild how, you know, you can make a video in 2 minutes and it can get a million views. And the thing that frustrates me is, you know, I've spent upwards of 3 hours making a single piece of content that's, you know, 50 seconds long, and put a lot of time and a lot of effort, you know, not just actual filming, but thinking the idea through and getting the edit right and being really proud of that video. And then it gets like, you know, 10,000 views in the first day. And you're like, damn, that, you know, that's not bad in terms of, you know, the whole social media world, but to get only 10,000 views when on average you're getting like 50, you're like, damn, what did I do for this to be a flop?
And the challenging part is you don't actually know what happened, right? Like that's if you knew, you would solve that problem.
Oh, absolutely. If I knew that all I had to do was go and film a video at Costco every day, I would. but that doesn't work either, because I've had videos, you know, shopping videos where one gets a million views and then the next one gets 25,000, and there's no consistency, and it's constantly changing. And you know, it's hard from a, if you look at it from a business mentality, you know, because you want to have that consistency, you want to have that regularity. But what's nice about it from a creative standpoint is it keeps you constantly on your toes. And that's the thing, like, it's very easy to get stagnant, especially when you're producing, you know, 300 videos a year. It's easy to just get, you know, tied up in all the things that are easy and convenient. But when you have to be creative, I find that's the most fun about this world and this job, I guess. And that's the nice thing about the algorithm constantly throwing curveballs.
You know what's funny about the shopping videos, though, is that every Costco has a different selection. Every store has a different selection. And then people are like super excited for the shopping video, even though their own shopping experience is almost certainly going to be different. And so I always find it interesting, like, how popular that content is, although I don't know how actually useful it is. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I totally agree. And, you know, I think in my experience, people just want something that's easy to relate to. You know, and I think we can provide that. And I think that's one of the appeals of content creators, influencers in general. You know, and I've had people say to me when they meet me in person, like, oh, wow, you're like a regular guy. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I am a regular guy. Like, I'm just some guy who really likes tequila. And I decided to talk about it. And now, you know, hundreds of thousands of people can go and follow me. But like, I'm just some guy, you know, I'm just some guy who really was interested in something. And because I again, you know, got lucky, I was really consistent and, you know, had the fortune of producing content that not only did I want to see, but apparently a lot of other people wanted to see. You know, I now have access and, you know, can get to talk to different people in the industry and meet these people and go to Mexico and visit them. And that's all really cool. But at the heart of it, I'm just some guy who really loves tequila. Like, I'm not an expert. I don't claim to be an expert. I just really love it. And I really care about it.
Being in Los Angeles, or Los Angeles area, big tequila community there, lots of popularity, of course. And you do a lot of work with different liquor stores and different shopping videos. So I'm sure you've got a lot of interactions with fans who come up to you in stores, etc. Any unusual or funny interactions you want to share?
You know, none of them have been funny in the sense, like, you know, we had like a good laugh at that at anybody's expense, thank God. But I mean, maybe they laughed at me afterwards because they realized I'm just some tequila nerd, but that's fine. But I think the funniest, but maybe the most really like genuine, really just feel good kind of interaction was I met this couple at a store here in LA. And I was just literally just standing there looking at the selection. The guy walked in with his girlfriend, wife, whoever she was. And he was like, oh my God, you're the guy. And I was like, hey, what's going on, man? And he's like, the reason I'm at this store is because of you. all of my collection I'd found because of you, all of these things. I was like, that's so awesome. What are you here to get? We had a whole conversation. I think I recommended like a bottle of Cascaline Tejon Blanco or something for him to get. And he was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Thank you so much. He buys the bottle. He walks out, him and his girlfriend leave. Like 5 minutes later, I'm still standing there. I'm talking to the owner. He walks back in with a pen and he goes, can you sign my bottle? And I literally said to him, I was like, dude, why would you want me to sign it? Not like, you know, I obviously did, but I didn't understand at the time, like why that was relevant, like why he needed my signature. Cause again, I'm just Rob. I'm just some guy. But to him, this was super important. So I kind of recognized it in the moment as it was happening. And I signed his bottle and I thought like, this is kind of silly, but that's kind of cool. Like this guy really appreciates me. And I'm really happy I could offer him this kind of, you know, whether it's advice or knowledge, information, whatever. But to me, the funny part about this whole experience was later that day I got home, I told my wife this whole story. And she said, you know, what's funny is they were probably sitting in the car in the parking lot for 5 minutes. And he said, I really wish I asked him to sign my bottle. And him and his girlfriend probably went back and forth. And she probably said to him, he seems like a really nice guy. Just go back in and ask him to sign the bottle for you. And when my wife told me that and put it in that perspective, I was like, yeah, that's pretty funny. People want photos with me at events. People want my autograph, oddly enough. I should probably work on my signature because it's kind of sloppy. But yeah, it's just really nice to know that there are people who care about something as much as I care about it, and I've been able to help them in their journey. And on the flip side of that, it's really nice to know that I've been able to help brands. And again, most of these brands that I've helped, you know, people get exposed to, they've never paid me a dime. They've never, you know, given me anything. A lot of them have never even reached out to me in any capacity. But, you know, like I'm always going to tell people, go buy Siete Leguas, go buy Tapatio, go buy Fortaleza if you can find it. Because these are just brands that I think anyone who knows about tequila enjoys. And I think more people should know about them. So it's really nice to know that I've helped these brands. And overall, it's just a really satisfying experience when people have that positive interaction in person with me.
Last question for you. If you could sip a great tequila with anybody in the world, who would it be and why?
That's a really good question. Probably, you know, no one's ever asked me this. And this for me seems kind of obscure. I wish you would give me like two or three people. But I think one person would be Arnold Palmer.
Oh, nice.
Growing up, so I played competitive golf as a kid to my teens. I wanted to be a professional golfer when I was a kid. You know, that was my dream. I wanted to be Tiger Woods. And I'm 33 years old. Like I was a kid when Tiger came up and was making, you know, his run of becoming the greatest ever. But for whatever reason, obviously I wasn't alive when Arnold Palmer was playing golf, but you know, his nickname, the King, lives on for very specific reasons. Without him, you know, the golf world doesn't exist in the capacity that it does today. I mean, he was what made golf, you know, something on television. You know, he co-created the Golf Channel. You know, he was really influential in terms of making golf a global game and a media spectacle in a sense. So for that, I feel like he would be interesting to talk to, but
and popularize the lemonade iced tea.
Well, I was going to get to that. There's also an Arnold Palmer iced tea, and I feel like, you know, you throw in maybe a Reposado would be good in an Arnold Palmer, so that would be cool. But yeah, but the other thing too is he reminds me a little bit of my grandfather who has passed away. But there's something about that like generation of men who, when they got to a certain age, they were just fun to talk to. And I think, you know, someone like him who was so influential in a sport that I cared so much, or I care so much about, that I love so much, that I've played literally my entire life. My dad had me hitting golf balls when I was 18 months old. You know, I think it'd be really fascinating to hear stories about, you know, being a professional golfer, winning the Masters, playing, you know, all over the world, you know, inventing the iced tea lemonade drink. Right. Yeah. But that's, yeah, that's probably a long-winded answer you weren't expecting. But Arnold Palmer, I think, would be a really cool person to just have a, even though he seems like the kind of guy who would probably drink like scotch, but we'll get him a glass.
That's a good question. We could probably sort that out. What did he actually drink? It's a great answer. And you've already talked about this in the past. I was also a young golfer, and my dad put a club in my hand when I was just a kid and played all the way through high school and teams and everything. And so a big fan, and I was alive when he was finishing his career. And you're exactly right. Like, none of this, you know, golf, well, you know, 2 million, 3 million people watching a golf tournament on Saturday would not be true without that individual. So huge impact. And that's the impact you're having on the tequila business. Rob, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it. It's been fantastic.
Thanks, Shay. It's always good to talk to you. I really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you soon.
You bet. Sippers, that was Rob Girard of the Tequila Collected. You can find him on Instagram, on TikTok, on YouTube, in stores near you. Go to thespiritguides.info or thespiritguides.video for links to all Rob's accounts and the show notes. Big thanks to our friends at lovescotch.com for their support. Check out their extraordinary curated collection. They'll send it right to your house. Show is produced and edited by our pals at content10x.com, whom we love and recommend for all your digital content. I'm Tequila J. Bear. You can make mine a double. Sippers, see you next time on The Spirit Guides.